This is Dak Prescott, and you're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome to Faith on the Field Show on 97.5 The Fanatic Philadelphia. I'm Rob Motti with my beautiful wife, Remy. Happy spring to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Springtime. I love springtime.
I love spring.
Weather turns. The clock goes back or forward. What does the clock do? Whatever.
It's spring forward.
Spring forward. The clock goes forward, but we get more daylight, and I wish it never
Everything
changes back to
good.
Whatever it is, but the weather is getting nicer back home. We're still hanging out in Florida a few more days. There's actually a couple days where Jersey's hotter than Florida.
It was one day.
And Friday, 81 degrees. And
right.
So that's, how about that?
Yeah,
so that's
okay.
Good. That's good. Enjoy it. I hope everybody's enjoying the beautiful weather. Looking forward to a nice spring,
mm-hmm.
an awesome summer. And
it's gonna be the best.
We won't look too far ahead to the fall yet, but the fall means football. So that's kind of good.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying free agency as it keeps me. The NFL is such a grind. The season is such a grind. Like we got here, and I felt like I needed to unplug. Like this season was unlike anything I've ever experienced before.
Insane.
It was such a constant grind, and I just needed to unplug for a little bit. So our guest this week, though, is a former NFL player, former NFL wide receiver Mark Pattison. This month, he begins his attempt to scale Mount Everest, which will complete for him his climb of the seven summits. It's an incredible story. So stay tuned for that conversation. I could not even imagine doing what he's trying to do. Like, it takes months to do this, and you're out there, and he details it, and it's just incredible resilience, and it's crazy. But he talks about being up on these mountains and seeing the beauty of all that God has created, and he talks about how that humbles him. And I want to talk a little bit about being humbled this week on this episode. And I've noticed, even though we've been, I don't know if you've noticed this, honey, but I've noticed while we've been away, I thought that while being away and unplugging and doing that, like, and being near the beach and being in the weather, and I would be not, I've been getting annoyed more so than I have been, like with stupid little things. And I've been impatient at times, right? And kids test your patience, and they're, even though we're here, they're still going through virtual school. And I just found myself being, I don't know, in this constant, I annoyed myself for being annoyed.
Well, the thing is, like, vacation puts your mind and everything else around you in limbo, because you're supposed to be happy, but you're not in your fun place. You're not in your zone. Because
you're not comfortable. Because
right.
Like,
so it puts you in, like, this weird
smaller,
limbo spot.
Right.
You know?
It's smaller place. And
you know, I've always said this. Like, I've always said that if you want to get to know someone, take them on vacation. Because I'm telling you, if you want to get to know someone, take them on vacation. Any kind of person, doesn't have to be a relationship, because it put them in a situation where they're supposed to be happy, but if they're miserable, you know, and they can't adapt, they will not adapt to so much in life.
That's
because
good. That's good.
Yeah, it's like it's up and down all day long because you're not really in your zone.
I think there comes a point during a vacation, especially when you're away for a long period of time, because this hasn't been a pure vacation for me. I work while we're here.
Exactly.
Right? So it's not a vacation. Mm-hmm. I very infrequently have days off, and I try and string a few together.
Yeah.
I think that contributes to, like, you're on the beach, you're near beautiful weather, but then you got to work. So that kind of, it's...
Right, and you're not in your space.
Yeah. So, but I think there comes a point in every vacation where you need a vacation from your vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Actually, it's exhausting.
Right?
I'm not gonna lie, because you're trying to, like, do
stuff,
so much.
Yeah. Right?
No, you're trying to do so much. You're cramping so much in one day, but there's only so much you could do.
But I want to tell you what I experienced a little bit, and it was through. So the other day, I get a really nice DM from a young sports writer, and I it was just really nice to see that, where he thanks me for. kind of like setting an example for younger guys on how to respond to trolls. Well, really, how not to respond, right? How to ignore. And it was just really nice. And then, you know, over the course of the past couple of days, like a lot of people reach out to me and I try and get back to them and different things like that. And we were just sitting at the pool. Like I do most of my reaching out to people, right? Like I can't, you've noticed this. I just can't sit there and do nothing.
No, you cannot sit still.
I can't.
That's just a,
so if
problem.
We're sitting on the beach or we're sitting in this case poolside, right? I'm doing like I got my phone and I'm like, I want to reach out to a few people. Just check in on them. Like, hey, you know, I just want to check in on a few people because, you know, it's the right thing to do. Sometimes it's a nice thing to do. And there's a particular friend who has gone through a really rough time.
Yeah.
A really rough time. He's overcome so many different obstacles and different emotional swings in his life and even a suicide attempted suicide at one point several years ago. I didn't even know about it. And I wanted to reach out to him. And we've texted probably a couple times in the past. He reached out to me maybe not even a month ago just to thank me. And I just reached out to him today and he was at the gym. Then he called me back. And to hear where he is now, to know where he's been, but to hear where he is now and to see how much he's improved and the perspective that he's gained, it inspired me. Like, he put me in a better, the conversation was meant to be, I reached out to him thinking, hey, you know, maybe he needs somebody to talk to or just want to check in, say hello, how are you, what's going on? And when he calls me, as he's going through what he's learned about himself and how he's changed and how he views things differently now, I was listening to it and I was so happy. Like, I was like, dude, this made my day. Because to hear, I've had those conversations with him when he was really low. And to hear where he is now, it really inspired me. I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'm really glad I had this conversation. And I realized I needed it. I realized like I needed to have this conversation
for you.
For me, because it put me in a better place. Yeah. Hearing he's in a better place put me in a better place. And I thought that that was so cool. And then listening to back to this interview, this conversation I had with Mark, and he's talking about being humbled. And I was looking at a couple Bible verses. There's two that I wanted to point out. Proverbs 11:2. And that says, pride leads to disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. And you think about that. Pride leads to disgrace. There have been so many moments in life like where we let pride stand in our way.
Right.
There's been so many times where I know I've allowed pride to really dictate certain things.
Decisions.
Often, right?
Right.
How many times do you, but as it says here, with humility, when you're humble, when wisdom comes.
It's difficult. It's not easy. It's really not easy because sometimes you're like, well, no, I'm better than that. I don't want to do that. Or like, no, this person treated me this way. I'm done. I'm taking like the high road or whatever. And it's not easy but Jesus was definitely the ultimate guy for the job. Like he was just so humble to the point that he would wash people's feet. Yeah. Like that is the most humble thing ever. Would I do that? I want to get to that level. I'm not going to lie. I'm not there yet. Mostly because I ski feet, but you know, but I want to get there.
I would never ask you to wash my feet or rub my feet. I love you to death. Yeah, I'm not. I don't want
not
you touch.
Yet.
Yeah, I don't want you doing that. Like I'm good. I'm okay.
You know, but I want to be humble to the point. Like I am to a certain extent, but there's some things that I'm just. I struggle with that because I'm just like. It's either I think of myself like highly or something, or I just feel like, no, I'm not really doing that. But as you said, that's prideful. Like I need to just.
That is prideful.
Yeah. And I need to kind of, I, Listen, I put it all out there. I'm not afraid or ashamed to like say that. I mean, and if we don't recognize our faults and we don't recognize like the things that we struggle with,
yeah,
we're never going to get better.
You can never move past it. And yeah, as I'm thinking about, well, why have I been annoyed or why have I allowed like little distractions or little things to bother me more than they should? And I feel like I want to do better. Yeah. I got to do better. I got to behave better. I got to set a better example. I got to be a better dad. I got to be a better husband. I got to be better. I'm in a way like I'm happy that I recognize that. Mm-hmm. Like I'm annoyed with myself.
Right.
That I'm not like that I even have to reach that point. But I'm happy that I recognize that and want to fix it.
Right.
Now, man, I got to fix it, though. That's the thing. Like, I want to fix it. So I recognize it, and yeah, I want to fix it. But why am I struggling with it?
Because we all struggle. We do. We all struggle.
We do. And yeah, and I've realized, like, I haven't been in the Word as much.
Yeah. You know, I read something cool today.
Mm-hmm.
I read something that really, like, spoke to me, and is because... Well, it's very true. But when you feel that you're far away from God, like you feel that distance, like because I feel it. And mm-hmm, I think it has to do with just not being, again, in our routine and our,
yeah,
whatever we do every day.
I miss the, so I miss, like, home. I love the water. Right. I love the beach. I love the weather. Right. I miss my daily routine.
Right. Me too. And my daily routine is like reading the Word and praying first thing, mm-hmm, in the morning and all that, which I do still, but not as consistent, which is not good. But again, vacation gets you all,
yeah,
out of place.
But very discombobulated.
Yeah, but I've been feeling this weird distance as if like I'm not in touch, mm, as much. And I read this word today. It says like when you feel distant from God, he's actually calling you deeper. So all he wants you to do is go deeper, not really just feel more distant. You know what I mean? Like, so when you feel that distance, don't go, yeah, I feel so distant. I guess like God is not thinking of me. He's actually drawing you, like he wants you to take you deep. He wants you deeper. He wants you to come closer. So
it's good to feel it then.
And it is. And I'm always like, I always do that self check. You know what I mean? I always like, you know, I check myself. Mm-hmm. You're like, where am I right now with my walk? Where am I right now with my, you know, prayer life? Where am I right now with my reading? And I'm not going to lie, it's weird because I've been busy but on vacation, yeah, at the same time.
Well, we both have a lot going, yeah, a on lot going right on now. And you know what? We may have potentially some exciting news. So pay attention to us on, follow our social media. We might have some very exciting news coming.
Yeah, and that's a weird limbo feeling. And yeah, I know a lot of people feel it too, because it's like a weird season that we're all in. We're kind of like between the shutdown and opening up.
Because we're still there. Like we
still don't know like what's happening. So everybody's in limbo. Like we want to get back to everything, but at the same time, it's not the same. And it's weird. And we're all feeling it. We're all feeling that distance. We're all feeling that crazy shift that's happening around us. But I really do feel that God is using this season to draw us a lot closer to him and to a place of just, I mean, I don't want to use the word revival lightly, because it really is happening around us every time, everywhere. But it really is like it's happening. With the chaos, with the darkness getting really dark,
mm-hmm,
he's using us, his children, to really shine brighter and brighter, and to touch things that hasn't been touched in a while. Like the things that were just like, it's the sin that's been in the world for too long. He's making us realize how bad it is and drawing us closer to him so we can shine brighter and show the world that there's so much out there, that it's there's needed. Light out there, and it's needed. So the limbo's okay, because it just kind of shakes you a little bit. It shakes you a little bit, makes you like, what's up? What's going on? Wake up a little.
Sometimes when you're in that period of limbo, I feel like I'm just going to sit still.
Right.
I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to be proactive. I'm going to wait and wait and wait until this happens. But those are those moments when you're sitting there, you got to still work through it. You still got to push forward.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier when I talked about Proverbs 11:2, and then you said, well, Jesus was the right man for the job, right? Jesus said in Matthew 23:12, I wanted to bring this verse up too. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. And I wanted to dive quickly into that. And this verse occurs in Matthew when Jesus is speaking to the crowds and to his disciples, and he's addressing the teachers of religious law. And what Jesus did was really challenge society's norms. And to him, greatness, it didn't come from what you did for a living or what you accomplished, but for him, greatness came from serving. And it goes exactly like, we didn't even talk about this verse ahead of time, but you're talking about Jesus washing disciples' feet. And this verse is talking about how he, to him, greatness comes from giving of yourself to help God and help others. And service is really being aware of the needs of other people. And it really stops us from focusing on ourselves only. And I kind of think back to that conversation when I reach out to my friend. And because I stopped thinking or wallowing in my own annoyance or pity of going, why have I been like a jerk? I just feel like I've kind of been a jerk. I don't know. And here's the cool thing. Like, thank you. Like, well, maybe you should call me out for it. Or maybe I've been, to me, like, I feel like I need a better standard. Because you have not been critical at all this whole time.
I'm trying to be cool, man. I'm trying to be cool.
Yeah, it's all right. Sometimes you got you got to whack me upside the head. That's okay. And be. But through me wanting to kind of serve someone or reach out to someone, it came back to me to realize, like, yeah, you know what? You can do a better job.
Yeah.
You should do a better job. Stop whatever the heck it is that you're going through right now and fix it.
Right. You know how people always say, whatever you're going through, someone else is going through worse?
Yeah.
And you always have to think about that, because I always think about that. Whatever I'm going through, I think of, like, what is happening out there in the world. And I think, okay, I really need to stop it. Like, that's just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
Or I think of, like, things God got me through that I'm like, all right, again, you are ridiculous. He got you through so much worse that this is okay. This is all right. He got you. He's going to get you through this too. And then I just snap out of it. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes it takes, like, a lot. But I snap out of it.
It's kind of what I've been saying to the kids a lot lately when they complain about whatever it is. And I go, well, you could be in a hut somewhere.
Right.
And it's true.
Right. It's true.
It's true. Our situation, so many others are in a worse situation.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And we got to be grateful for what we have, appreciative of what we have. But as you said, check yourself. Mm-hmm. Evaluate yourself. And I do constantly evaluate myself. And so sometimes I look in that mirror, and if I don't like something and I'm trying to fix it and I'm frustrated or annoyed or bothered or irritated, man, I just pray on it. Pray on it. Pray on it. Pray on it. And just constantly keep praying about it. Up next, you're going to hear from former NFL wide receiver Mark Pattison. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Karen University is a biblical university located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Center City, Philadelphia. With NCAA Division III athletics, a strong commitment to the arts, and majors in over 40 professional and academic fields, Karen prepares students to serve Christ as biblically minded, well-educated, and professionally competent men and women of character. Learn more at Karen.edu.
Since 1930, the Heritage family has proudly served the communities of South Jersey. From humble roots, Heritage's dairy stores now operate 33 convenient locations. Their desire is to become your convenience store of choice, not just because of their welcoming atmosphere, but because of their fresh quality products. Heritage's milk is still the sweetest. Coffee's hot and fresh, and Heritage's full-service delis offer the best local ingredients prepared and sliced on site, far exceeding the competition. Heritage's Dairy Stores. It's not just our name, it's our heritage.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc. is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have two daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
Hey, this is Jerome Bettis, former running back from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show. Rob Motti with Remy. If you're tuning in for the first time on radio, you can go to faithonthefieldshow.com, find every show. Since we launched in 2017, we've had an awesome lineup of guests, so you can listen anytime at your convenience. We're on Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Podbean, as well as iTunes, variety of ways you can listen to Faith on the Field Show. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Faith on the Field. If you want to sign up for our weekly email list, we will send each episode right to your inbox. Make sure you also follow us on all of our personal social media platforms. I'm at Rob Motti on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. At Real Rob Motti on Instagram. Remy is at Remy Motti across the board. We'll let you know about speaking appearances and other events that we're doing, that we're hosting. You can go to my YouTube channel and listen to some of my messages and interviews as well. Our guest this week, Mark Pattison, was a seventh round pick by the Raiders in 1985. He played five seasons in the league at wide receiver with the Raiders, Rams, and New Orleans Saints. He's had a very successful career after football, and we sat down to talk about he's got a fascinating journey that includes his upcoming attempt to climb Mount Everest that will complete his goal of climbing the seven summits, which would make him the first NFL player to achieve this incredible feat. Here's Mark Pattison.
Mark, this is the time of year where college kids get ready for the NFL draft. You were a seventh-round pick and made it to the NFL. Seventh round picks, we know, are usually long shots, but you were a seventh round pick by the Raiders, made it to the NFL, had a nice career. What would you say to these youngsters who aren't going to be first day picks, who aren't going to be second day picks, guys who are perhaps on the fringe of how you fought to stay in the league, to get in the league, and what can they expect?
Well, you know, first of all, when I thanks for the introduction, and when I went through it, it's interesting because there's typically a process, and that process involves, as you mentioned, it's not happening this year, but you go to the combine, and you know that's a whole experience in itself with all the agents and all these amazing players that you've seen all over the country, and essentially they gather the top 336 players all in one spot. My year, we ended up at Arizona State, and the disadvantage of Arizona State is that we ran our 40s, which for a wide receiver, that's everything. And so off we went, we did it. I performed pretty well. That was actually the year that this little known guy named Jerry Rice was in the same, draft class as me. And I didn't think somebody from that small school would ever make it, but answering your question, you know, I went into this and it played out well for me. And I've seen this time and again, which is where the agents and coaches and other teams have these projections where you think you might go. And I always went into it with the mentality of just, I'm just happy to be anywhere picked. And in those days, there were 12 rounds. And I think far too often, somebody gets their hopes up. And so if they don't make it in the first round or the second round or the third round, and maybe they end up where I did down at the seventh round, it's a disappointment. And being in the seventh round pick, especially with the Raiders back in those days, I was over the moon. And I think if you just go in with that attitude and things will take care of themselves, because, you know, getting drafted is just a small piece of the pie. I can remember when we came to our first mini camp and Tom Flores, who just recently got inducted in the Hall of Fame, was the head coach. And we're probably 150 guys, all the vets, all the team players from the previous year, free agents and the draft picks, the 12 draft picks that had just come in. And we're all sitting around, 150 of us. And he goes, hey, you know, just so we are all very clear on the goal here, only 55 of you guys are going to make this team. And I said, you know, I was thinking, or I was looking around the room, I was thinking this in my head, like, I'm not sure who you were thinking about right now, but I will be sitting here at that time. And then you just have to have that total focus. I had many people come up to me and say, you'll never make it. And you just got to look at that as noise. And you have to go beyond what you've ever done before in terms of making that team, all out commitment, to have that focus and that discipline to ultimately make that team.
What is the toughest part of being, because any of these guys, whether they're selected in a sixth round, seventh round, back then even beyond that, eighth and ninth and 10th, you had to be really good in college. You were maybe a star on your team, and now you're just fighting for an opportunity. What does it take as far as that mindset to go from being maybe the big man on campus to just trying to fit in? How do you adjust?
Well, I think ego plays a role in all this, and certainly you have to have an ego and the one of a gladiator to get to that level. And at the same time, you have to be willing to do anything and don't be a diva. That things don't work quite your way and they ask you to play special teams, you know, you're like all in and you're willing to do whatever it takes. And for some people, you know, there's the practice squad and that is the destiny and that's where you can hone your skills. And for other people, it's making the team and they become a starter or maybe they're a backup. But you have to be willing to do and be very unselfish because the teams are so small. They don't have the resources like they do at college where they have three or four deep all the way down to the kickers and the punters. You know, it's just you have to be scrappy. So really keeping that discipline of and that focus of doing whatever it takes and just hanging in there. You know, I think, you know, the physical part is a huge component of it. The mental part is another big hurdle to get through because, you know, you know, your friends that you become acquainted with and you're playing with are now starting to drop like flies. They're being cut and you just can't play mental games. Another thing, and this was a big thing, is knowing your plays, knowing you can be counted on. And I can tell you, there were a lot of players that were a lot better than me physically, but they didn't study. They didn't know the plays. They were constantly screwing up. There were, you know, penalties on them. And if a coach can't count on that player, you see this time and again with a coach like Coach Belichick, yeah, where he has maybe talent that isn't, you know, maybe as good as, you know, others, but he gets guys who are reliable, they're hardworking, and they're willing to do anything that he asks them to do.
You mentioned Tom Flores, you played for him, you played for John Robinson, you played for Jim Mora. You were on some pretty successful teams in New Orleans. The Rams were a winning team too as well. What are some of your big favorite memories when you look back on your NFL career? What stands out to you, Mark?
Well, look, I mean, I want to be really clear that you know, I was never a star, but at the same time, everybody has to have their place and you're either in the club or you're not. And I'm in the club, right? 5 years. And I, you know, every team was unique and special in its own way. And again, you know, when I formed this alliance with Howie Long and Jim Plunkett and Marcus Allen and all these other greats. And I thought I'd be there for life. And, you know, 3 years later, this is 2 days before the first game, opening game, I make the team and then I get traded to New Orleans, right? And I'm like, what the, you know, so now I'm down in New Orleans. I've never been in the South before and I'm making all these new friends and these new teammates. And when I went down there, even as iconic as the Raider team was when I was there back 85 to 87, when I got to New Orleans, it blew my mind because they'd never won a game. I'm sorry, they never had a winning season. Mm-hmm. And so I had never come from that environment. I had never come from that culture. My teams at the University of Washington with what would turn out to be a Hall of Fame coach, Don James, we'd been to Rose Bowls and we'd won in those days, the Pac-10 multiple times, the Orange Bowl. I mean, we had nothing but success. The Raiders, nothing but success. And the first game we play the Cleveland Browns. And this is back when Bernie Kosar was the quarterback. And they come to the Superdome, and I run out there, and I wasn't going to play that much because I didn't even know the playbook. I landed there 2 days before, but I'm suited up. I run out on the field, and afterwards, you know, we pulled off an upset, and everybody came in the locker room, was crying, and, you know, just all this emotion. And it was the emotion of knocking off a top-ranked team, and maybe this is the first year. We ended up going, I think, 13-2, 14-2. We were the Miller Lite team of the year, and the whole city just caught on fire. And that to be a part of, you know, everywhere I went, like my best friend on the team is Morton Anderson, a Hall of Fame kicker, 25 years. And everywhere we went, you know, we never paid for a burger, a drink, you know, admission to get in anywhere. It was just, you know, carte blanche. And, you know, it was just seeing a city really embrace you. And I'd always come from a winning culture. So it was just fun to be a part of that.
Well, you mentioned in college, going to Rose Bowls, going to Orange Bowl, you caught the go-ahead touchdown and it was your final game, right? The Orange Bowl senior season, you catch the go-ahead touchdown for Washington. Man, what was that experience like as you look back on it now all these years later, just being in that environment, going through that and playing in games like that and catching important passes?
Well, you know, I really go back to things went well for me in high school, but I really never learned how to work at my craft. You know, I was just naturally gifted and it was a totally different time. So there weren't 7-on-7 camps and Nike, you know, all this kind of stuff and lifting weights. We just kind of showed up. And that's what I did when I was a freshman. I remember it was 6'2", 181 pounds, could not bench my weight. And I spent many, 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 many years working my way up into that and repetition and practice and repetition and practice. And the first game I finally got to start was against Michigan. And it was really incredible because I had a moment where it was just like the way I ended my career, but this is my essentially first big moment. Husky Stadium, we were down by 2 touchdowns and we came back, we scored a touchdown, got the ball 2 minutes ago, drove the length of the field. And with, I think, 17 seconds to go in the game, I got a pass in the back of the end zone. I jumped up and caught it and came down and we won the game. And, you know, the crowd's going crazy. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I'm in now in the Orange Bowl and the same scenario, we're down and we had to come back. And now I think there was 5 minutes ago. And again, you know, corner of the end zone, you know, toe tap, come down, diving catch, the whole thing. And it's just one of those moments, though, that even though those were bright spots for me and in Husky history, I had done that 1,001 times in my head, dreaming, visualizing. I had done that in practice. And so even though those were, you know, I performed in that to be my best, I mean, the amount of practice, those are the things that nobody really thought to put myself in a position of success in those moments.
Beyond your NFL career, you've gone on to do so many different things. And now you've taken up mountain climbing several years ago. You have this goal that you began in 2013 to climb the 7 summits. How did you even get into that? Like, how does one realize, you know, mountain climbing is a thing that I want to do. I'm passionate about it. And I'm going to set my goals so high that this is what I want to achieve.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think not only do a lot of NFL players and players in general understand and can identify with this, but I think people in general can identify with this. And, you know, I was married to my college sweetheart and known her for 30 years, married 24. And we just got to a point where, you know, it was not happening and she didn't want the same things I wanted anymore. And it was very hard and very painful. And, you know, I was in this really stuck spot for a number of years and growing up in Seattle and anybody who knows the Great Northwest knows there's a lot of mountains around. We've got one grand one called Mount Rainier. I climbed that several years before this all happened. And, you know, for years, I was trying to like figure out how this is all going to work, how this is going to work. And I wasn't moving forward and I don't do well in quicksand. And so finally one night I changed that question from how did I get here and kept dwelling on that to what am I going to do about it? And when that happened, it was like this gigantic weight came off my shoulders. And it was like, you know what? I need to do something great and not something ordinary, but something great to help pull me out of this place I'm in. And also just give me a whole new renewed energy about life and where I was at, because I was in a bad place. And so, you know, again, going back to growing up in the Northwest, and I started doing some research and I knew about a lot of famous mountain climbers and I'd done some climbing, nothing big, but climbing certainly around the Northwest. And I found that no NFL player had ever climbed the 7 summits. be that guy. And so it slowly started going around the world every year and climbing various mountains. But I think the main point out of all this that I didn't really realize at the time was that the amount of healing that took place being in nature. And, you know, when you're climbing these things, you're in these places that there's hours and hours and hours and days and days and days of solitude. You're with people, but you're separated by rope, you know, every 30 yards or so. And so there's just a lot of processing that's going on. It took me some years to get through it and get over it. But, you know, slowly I got healed, you know, in terms of I moved on, and that was hard, and, you know, reconciled with my kids, and we got that back together. And then I started really seeing, you know, the mountains and all these other people and these cultures and different perspectives, and that there was a way out and that this was going to happen. And here I find myself now, we're talking on March 9th, and, you know, I'm only a couple weeks away from realizing not only my seventh summit, which is Mount Everest, but also I'm going to come down in the zone of 6,000 feet and then go back up the fourth highest mountain in the world called Lhotse. It's 27,940 feet. And try to take that on. And there's only a handful of people have done it. And I'm training like an animal to make that happen and realize my dream.
Wow, that's incredible. What is the toughest part about doing that? Is it more mental than it is physical? Because obviously you have to be in great shape. You've trained, you've prepared. So when you're up there, is the mental harder than the physical?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I don't, you know, I guess at the end of the day, it's both, because it takes a lot of physical exertion. And just because I might be fit doesn't mean that your body can handle being at 26,000, 27,000, 29,000, which is the top of Mount Everest. And then the other side of it is I'll be on that mountain for 2 months. And, you know, to go through none of the conveniences, to sleep in a tent on the ice, minus 20 degrees every night, you know, the things that you take for granted of going to a restaurant or taking a shower or just the internet or things like that, they all go out the window. And so it's a lot like NFL training camps. And back in the day, it's different now, but back in the day, it was 6 weeks of 2 days. And it was as much a test of hanging in there and just one step at a time, going up the mountain, one practice at a time, don't get too far ahead of your skis, and just stay focused, task at hand. And that will get you to the end. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to fast forward and blink, and it's going to be June, right? And this whole thing will be over. And to think that I gave up early just because I missed the conveniences of home and my kids and things like that, for me, would be really tragic. And so I have to just stay in the moment. And I think that is what will get me through it. And I've been doing all this crazy training here in Sun Valley, Iowa. And hopefully the physical will also propel me up and down the mountain safely.
So, Mark, you're about to embark on this journey. Exactly when?
I leave for Nepal on March 30th.
On March 30th. And what is the anticipated time, the length of that?
Yeah, well, it's roughly 2 months. You know, just some quick education for you. The reason why you can't just roll over there and climb it in a week and come back is because there's the monsoon sits on top of, in the jet stream on top of Mount Everest. And so if you went up there today, for example, it'd be blowing 200 miles per hour, right? In freezing temperatures. And so the monsoon actually lifts from the top of Mount Everest, and there's a 2 week window in the spring, and there's a 2 week window in the fall. And what happened in 2019, when we all saw those off of images of those super long lines and people stuck in a traffic jam going up, is that the monsoon, rather than have a 10-day window, say there was only a 2-day window, a 1-day window. And so when that happened, everybody got summit fever and said, let's roll. And so you ended up having massive lineup and, you know, all kinds of, my tent mate in Antarctica died in that mess. And, you know, it was sad and unfortunate. So I'm hoping this year, two things are going to happen. One, I'm told that half the amount of people are going to be there. And two, that we actually get a monsoon lift that will be a couple of weeks. So everybody doesn't feel like they have to go all at one time. You can space it out.
How many people are part of your team who will be there with you?
Well, there's 13 total people. There's the guide, and then there's a number of Sherpa that will be there to support the journey.
And you've dedicated this to your daughter, Amelia. Yeah. Tell me about that and what she's gone through and the adversity that she's overcome.
Well, you know, going back, Rob, on some of the things, you know, like I couldn't have told you this 7 years ago. I couldn't have told you 5 years ago. But what's the miracle of all this have been all the gifts that have been given by stepping out, stepping into the fear. And, you know, unfortunately, my daughter has epilepsy and her name is Amelia. And so a couple of years ago, I was actually invited to part of Chris Long, who I know, and he started a foundation called Water Boys. I was part of his first class to raise money and awareness to go down to Tanzania and build water wells for the people of the Maasai tribe. And we did that. And then with a handful of other NFL players, military folks, we climbed Kilimanjaro. It was a great trip. But what really shook my head was about contribution. When I went there, I was happy to do that. I personally raised $47,000. But more than that, I was like, you know, my daughter has epilepsy. She has seizures every day. And I need to partner with an organization that can really help her. So there's an organization here in Sun Valley called Higher Ground. And we created a campaign called Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. So essentially, we've now raised over $50,000. The original goal, $27,940, which matches the height of Lhotse. So blessed, the NFL threw in money, the Las Vegas Raiders threw in money, a number of other people have donated to the cause. And, you know, it's not just for Amelia, but it's for military people too, as well, that are dealing with cognitive issues and they've had their legs or their arms in one off in Iraq or Afghanistan. So it's just wonderful to be a part of something like that.
I know you have a podcast also called Finding Your Summit, in which you've interviewed athletes, celebrities, all kinds of legends. How often do you have opportunity to sit down and put out episodes? And what has that experience been like for you? How much fun do you have doing it?
Well, I'll tell you something. I mean, I'm obviously on your podcast right now, so you're going to relate to this. It's another blessing. I've done 185 episodes. They drop every Friday morning, Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding a way. The thing that's a pain is trying to schedule people and just trying to up all those things. And that's the challenge. But I got to tell you, I did a podcast today. I do them weekly. And I did a guy named Oz Sanchez. And, you know, he grew up in East LA and kind of in a drug culture and fought his way out of it, went to the military, became a badass Marine. And then decided that he was going to make a switch over and become a Navy SEAL. And there's a 6-week window in there. And during that window, he was on his motorcycle. He was hit and paralyzed from the waist down. And since he's gone on to a lot of great things, he's won the gold medal in the Paralympics of sit down cycling and things like that. So the point is that by, I think, humbling me of talking to other people who've had things way worse than me. I thought my situation was the worst thing in the world when I was being, you know, going through the separation years ago. And I'm talking to guys with no arms, no legs, crawling up mountains that I've run into, the blind going down the Colorado River, been burned from these horrific accidents. I mean, it's amazing the stories of the human resilience. And compared to my story, you know, it's nothing. So another thing I've really learned through this whole journey is perception, you know, perspective. And again, I thought my situation was the worst, but when you back up for a moment, there's a whole lot of people with a lot worse things going on right now.
Man, that's incredible, Mark. And, you know, I'm looking forward to following your journey, to seeing what it's all about, seeing you achieve what you've set out to do. I know you've got this heart for just wanting to give back to people, for wanting to find ways to help others. And where did that develop for you? Was it somewhere along the way where somebody did something for you and now you're just paying it forward? How did that come about where you developed kind of this attitude of wanting to help and wanting to give back?
I think it's just the cycle of life. You know, Tim McGraw's got this great song called Humble Unkind, and there's a line in there that says something like, when you get to where you're going, make sure you turn around and always be humble and kind, and essentially give forward, pay it forward to the people once you've reached that success. And I really believe that that's true. You know, my daughter is somebody who's very dear to me. I have two daughters. They're both, you know, amazing, but this one has had a challenge, you know, in school and learning and everything else. And I think being exposed to giving back. And I think, again, the beauty of all this is that the NFL Films, for example, was just here in Sun Valley, and they're going to documentary on this journey that I'm doing. I'm super grateful and blessed. But what's happened is that some of the light that has shone on me from what I did years and years ago is now being redirected in a positive way to help others. And if I can be an inspiration by just getting off the couch and going and doing this big, massive goal, then that's awesome. But, you know, more importantly is that I just want to see my daughter healed. And, you know, it's just been a blessing, and the people involved in seeing the healing and all these other things have just been amazing to be a part of.
You talk about blessings. I wonder how much is faith part of your journey?
It's a big part, you know, and I don't think things just randomly happen. I think, you know, you have to make them happen, but I think there's a higher being, and you really see that, you know, that shine through when you're on these mountains. And I'm up there, you know, I'm on Denali, for example, which is just an amazing place to be. The Denali National Park, for example, just the national park is bigger than the state of Massachusetts, just, you know, just to size that up, but you're up there. And just the beauty and what God has been able to provide and drop down. And it's really breathtaking. And it really humbles, or at least it humbles me into my place in the world.
Well, man, I really appreciate your time, Mark. I'm excited to follow this through and see and stay in touch. You know, I want to know how you're doing afterwards and everything along the way. So wish you a ton of blessings.
Yeah, I've got one more drop here, and I'm not trying to plug my website, but there's a cool component of that, which is neat. On my website, www.markpattisonnfl, there's a follow button. The real point is I have a Garmin InReach mini system. So think of me as a walking satellite, and people, we've hooked it up in a way that people can actually follow my journey as I'm going up the mountain. And so I'll go up and I'll go down, I'll go up a little higher and I'll come down, I'll go up a little higher than that and come down. And I'll also write on the blog on that, but you know, it's going to be cool and I can't wait to interact with people through that, but you can actually follow, you know, my tracks on this mountain.
Man, technology awesome. It's so good that we're able to think that you can do that now, that we could follow your journey exactly that way. It's incredible.
You know, before I met you down at the Super Bowl in Atlanta, I just discovered this technology. And I was saying the exact same thing to myself. I'm in Antarctica of all places, right? And there's nobody really down there. I mean, you can't sustain life. And I climbed a mountain called Vincent Massif. I'm up at the top texting my good friend, Jim Mora. I made it. I said, touchdown. And it's an app on my phone connected to this Garmin. You know, it was just like, you know, where else could I do this?
That's awesome. Mark, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you. It's been fantastic. Appreciate it.
That was former NFL player Mark Pattison. This is Faith on a Field Show with Rob and Remy Mahdi.
Located in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, just 25 minutes from Philadelphia, Caron University is the right place for students to get a dynamic experience centered on Christ and His Word. Students are equipped professionally, personally, and spiritually, and make an impact on the local community and surrounding cities. Caron is close to everything that matters for future educators, pastors, social workers, entrepreneurs, musicians, and more. See if Caron is the right place for you. Schedule a visit today at caron.edu/visit.
With 33 convenient locations, Heritage's Dairy Stores desire to be your deli of choice. Heritage's full-service delis offer great-tasting products for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Hera Egg Breakfast Sandwich made with 2 farm-fresh eggs, cheese, and choice meat on a fresh Kaiser roll makes your morning simple. Heritage's famous subs are built on freshly baked Lissio rolls and feature Dietz & Watson premium meats and cheeses freshly sliced anytime. Making lunches at home? Try one of our lunchbox specials, which are sure to please. Heritage's Dairy Stores, our family, your hometown deli.
Did you know creating your legacy documents, will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, etc., is important because it allows you to have control over how your estate will be distributed upon your passing? You also get to decide who will make decisions, both financial and medical, if you are incapacitated and unable to make them for yourself. It allows a trusted family member or friend to become the decision maker. Without these documents, these types of decisions will be determined by a court based upon state laws that may or may not be in order with your desires and intentions. I have two daughters and realized they could be in trouble if something happened to my wife and I. Thank goodness for Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates, because now Remy and I have our estate planning documents in place to protect our family, which is even more important during these challenging times. Make your appointment with Brenda Lee Utzler and Associates at 856-428-2266. Like I did, to get the peace of mind that estate planning can bring. That's 856-428-2266.
This is Emmitt Smith. You're listening to Faith on the Field Show.
Welcome back to Faith on the Field Show. I'm Rob Motti with Remy. I want to take a minute to thank our awesome sponsors. Please check them out on our website, Cairn University, Heritage's Dairy Stores, Brenda Lee Utzler, and Associates. If you would like to be a sponsor for our show, please reach out to us at team@faithonafieldshow.com. You can also reach me anywhere on social media too. We've got various packages that we can cater to fit any needs that you may have on radio, on social media, on our podcast. There is so much that we can do with you if you partner up with Faith on the Field and help us grow our ministry. Our goal is to be on a sports radio station in every state, so you can help us make that happen. If you don't have a business to advertise on, but you just want to help see the ministry grow, we do have a donate button on our page on faithonthefieldshow.com, and you can also help our ministry by purchasing some of our new merchandise through Remy's 828 Threads Apparel Store. We got t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, so much more. Most popular shirt has been My Story, His Glory. One of our cool new designs features a football helmet and the phrase, "I wear the helmet of salvation," from Ephesians 6:17. There's really awesome stuff. You can check it out on our site, faithonthefieldshow.com, under merch, and also all over our social media. I want to thank our guest this week, Mark Patterson. Big thanks to Doug Horton and Pastor Scott Foreman for all their hard work for Faith on the Field Show. Thank you to all of our listeners and everyone who makes this happen. For Remy, I'm Rob Motti, reminding you, make a difference, be a blessing.